Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 31st of January 2016. My name is T.R.P. Watson, and this week I'm joined by Gareth James, Nick from Pastures Abstracted View, Johnny Fox and Paul in London. We're now going to talk about Pink Mist at the Bush Theatre. This is a play written by Owen Shears and co-directed by George Mann and John Retallick. It was put on by the Bristol Old Vic in 2015, where I think The Guardian said it was its best play, one of its plays of the year at least, and it's now being put on at the Bush Theatre. Nick, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
I think it actually originated as a radio play, which I didn't know until after seeing it, but it does make a certain amount of sense. And it's a verse drama, mostly blank verse, but there is some rhyme in there as well, about the war in Afghanistan, which is obviously a subject we've seen a lot of plays about. But this, to me, it justifies its staging because it's not just very good, but it also feels very different to anything I've seen before. It's the story of basically three teenagers initially from Bristol. It goes on over a couple of years, so sometimes you're hearing about them being sort of in their early 20s. But it starts when they're about 17, 18, and the leader of kind of the gang is Arthur, played by Phil Dunster, and he's very much the narrator and sort of main character of the story. And they're all three of them sort of don't really have any prospects, but it's Arthur who has the idea to go to the Army Recruitment Centre, and he talks the other two into doing the same thing. His friends are called Taff, who's played by Peter Edwards, and Hads, who's played by Alex Steadman. So the three of them end up going to Afghanistan, and it's probably not too much of a spoiler to say that things turn out quite traumatically for more than one of them. All of them in different ways have come back not the same. So it deals with characters getting both kind of physical injuries and mental injuries, kind of severe post-traumatic stress. But it keeps kind of a lot of life to it, a lot of energy to it. So it's not really kind of a maudlin piece. And what the directors have done with, as I say, what started as a radio play is, I mean, I would call it a dance production, really, because it's so physical and it's so much kind of done in movement. So you get kind of the story told, kind of everybody's kind of in civilian clothes, because it's kind of told from the perspective of being back at home afterwards in Bristol and kind of picking up the pieces. And it jumps between how things are at home and how things are in Afghanistan. And it's got a huge amount of energy, and there's kind of a six strong cast. There's also, as well as the three men, there's three women. There's Rebecca Hamilton, Rebecca Killick, and Zara Ram. They play, two of them are girlfriends of the guys, and the third one is one of the mothers. And there's usually one person kind of narrating the story, usually Phil Dunster, as I say. But there's usually somebody centre stage with the others kind of backing them up. And the women are very much there to kind of pick up the pieces. I thought, having seen some of the production photos, I thought this would be kind of a bit of a story of that included the fact that there's women on the front line as well. It doesn't actually, because what it's doing, it's got a refrain of Who Wants to Play War. And so this is one of these things of, it keeps coming back to the idea of sort of war as child's game that's gone horribly wrong. So it's very much boys playing, and then everything goes horribly wrong and the women have to pick up the pieces. I think this is a really excellent piece. There was a couple of things I was kind of hoping to see go slightly differently, and I kind of at the interval thought, you know, I think this is going to go this way, but I'd rather it went somewhere a bit more interesting. But there's only a couple of tiny criticisms I've got against it. For me, this was it's a highly recommended piece, and a very strong cast, not many of whom I'd seen before. There's a couple of moments when the drama edges into cheesiness, but mostly it kind of really stays very focused. And I think Phil Dunster's a very promising actor, he's a very promising lead. Gareth, what did you think?
I thought it was very, very good indeed. And Owen Shears, it seems to me, has a real understanding and empathy with victims of war, because a couple of years ago he did a lot of research with returning soldiers, and he wrote a play called The Two Worlds of Charlie F, which never actually came into London, but I saw on tour. And this was not only based on the research, but actually featured a lot of injured servicemen in the cast as well. And then for the First World War centenary, he actually wrote a play called Mametz about a famous battle in the First World War for the National Theatre of Wales, which was performed in the open air in a forest. And this third piece, even though it's clearly fictional, I think kind of shows us that he really does understand, you know, through that research, I think he's kind of understood, you know, what the victims of conflict and indeed the relatives of people who come back injured as well. And I think it shows, because there is a great sort of, well, authenticity, I think, to the piece. I mean, it's done largely in monologue, but what they do is that they use this kind of stylized movement or dance. And I think that kind of opens the play up quite a lot. So I like that very much. And they also use sound to great effect as well, although it did make me jump quite a few times. And I think the movement and the sound kind of added to the dialogue, which, as you say, is largely in verse and is very sort of literary, I think do kind of combine to create something that's really rather effective. I thought the second half was tighter than the first half. I thought the first half, you know, could have been edited a little bit, because I thought the first half was a bit overlong. And I think that the role of Arthur is so dominant that sometimes that's at the expense of the development of the other characters. But those are small things to say, because I think it's an incredibly effective piece, really. I think it really does quite a lot to help us understand and to sympathise with these people. And I think it's very important in that sense. So yes, I think it's very pleased it came to London. I think it's, you know, the sort of thing that should be seen by a lot of people. And I thought it was, you know, quite simply done, but very effectively done, and very much recommended from me.
We're now going to talk about Yen, which is upstairs at the Royal Court. This is a play by Anna Jordan, which won the Bruntwood Prize for Playwriting in 2013. It's directed by Ned Bennett, who also directed Pomona. It concerns two boys, Hench and Bobby, who live in their mother's council flat in Feltham. But she's always away, off with her new boyfriend, or generally getting drunk and awful. They have a dog, which they are keeping in a spare room, and the dog is getting increasingly fierce and miserable because they don't really know how to feed it. They're young boys, or they're supposed to be young boys, they're sort of 17 and 13, and into their lives comes Jenny, a young woman from Wales, where her name might be Yen, as in the title, and she seems intent on looking after the dog. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
It might be worth talking about the setting first. It's in the theatre upstairs, which is configured in a traverse setting. So there are two rows on the two long sides. Then there are kind of climbing frames at either end, and an incredible amount, 60 or something, very bright lights. And then in the middle of this area, you know, there's just a bed and a chair, really. And it's a very voyeuristic kind of setting. I mean, you're really kind of on top of it, and it's kind of happening right in front of you. And in fact, when you enter the theatre, the two boys are there, and they're kind of moving around and doing things and setting the scene for you. These two boys clearly are, you know, their mother isn't really capable of parenting. You know, not only is she off with her boyfriend living somewhere else, but she's also off her head a lot of the time as well. And when we first see her, she's kind of outside the flat, lying out on the ground quite drunk. So they're kind of in the flat, and they just spend their life watching porn and playing video games, really. They don't have any clean clothes because they took them around to their nan's for washing, and then she went off as an asylum seeker. They don't have any food because they don't have any money to buy it, although they do sort of steal a few things. And as you say, the dog, with the wonderful name of Taliban, is in another room making a mess. They can't take the dog out because he's likely to attack something if they walk him. And that's how the girl comes into their lives, because she's outside. She realizes this dog is not being well looked after, and she's very much an animal lover, and she sort of she comes in to deal with that issue. But then, you know, other things unfold on a kind of quite an emotional roller coaster, really. The mother, we see the mother, and clearly the mother has, the mother and the younger boy, Bobby, absolutely adore each other, and their relationship is very strong, and he's, you know, he doesn't care that she's a drunk and not there, he just adores her. And she clearly loves her younger son, but has a much more problematic relationship with her elder son. And their only contribution to their parenting, really, is just to rent the flat. And then I think the play kind of shows us the kind of link between proper parenting and behavioural and emotional development of children and the consequences of that. I think that's really what the play is about. And some people say it's contrived, and I think there is an extent to which it is. But, you know, in my view, most plays are contrived one way or another. But I think it does cover some ground I'm not sure I've seen that much of in the past, this kind of ground around parenting and the consequences of parenting when it goes wrong, really. I think it's got, you know, because of the configuration, I think it does have an incredible intensity about it. And I felt you do engage with the characters very much. I thought that Alex Austin and Jake Davis, who play the teenagers, Alex Austin, the elder one, and Jake Davis, the younger one, clearly they're older as actors than the characters are. But they do kind of create, I mean, there's a kind of reckless physicality to the way they play it. But for the elder one, he's kind of got a brooding introspection that you'd get with a 16-year-old, and the younger one has got more of a naivety and indeed a dependence that you'd expect perhaps from a 13-year-old. But I thought they were both stunning performances, frankly. The mother, you know, Sean Brecklin, I think is extremely good. She conveys this kind of, she goes from sober to drunk, and she has to change during the play quite a lot. And I think she does that very well. And even though, you know, you can see her love of her boys, or at least the younger one, you can't help blaming her, because a lot of what's happening here is down to her poor parenting. And then we've got a young actress called, I think it's Annis Elwy, who captures this kind of girl from the sticks, who gets caught up in this kind of situation, really. It's only 100 minutes or so, and I just thought it was really very gripping. I thought it was covering ground I haven't seen in the theatre before. I mean, I thought it was a touch contrived, but I think it was well written. And I think, you know, the combination of the writing, the performances and the staging were extremely good. And it's sort of sitting in the Royal Court upstairs as a new, you know, piece of new writing, which won the Bruntwood Prize, like the Rolling Stone that we talked about, I think, last week. And, you know, at the time when there's an established playwright downstairs doing another one of her sort of dull minimalist pieces, really. So I thought it was a very, very good evening in the theatre. And I mean, joy is not the right word, but I was very, very glad I went to see it. Nick, what did you think?
I also thought it was a very good evening at the theatre. I think I possibly I wasn't convinced entirely by the play as much. I think it was a better production than the play itself. You know, I agree that the performances are very good. And I mean, that's something I also was commented on when I reviewed it, is that the kind of lead actors are clearly older than the characters they're playing, but they both kind of convince you, despite the fact that they're obviously too old, they kind of convince you that they're right for the parts, and that they are kind of these teenagers. Interestingly, to me, it's kind of a weird coincidence between doing this in Manchester and doing it here. They've both played the same character in different productions of Barbarians, which is a bit, well, it was odd that there was those two productions of Barbarians so close together anyway. Alex Austin and Jake Davis played the same part in two different productions. I don't know. I saw afterwards another review, one of the kind of official reviews, that called it poverty porn, and I kind of know where they're coming from. I was unconvinced, really, by kind of the research into it, and it does kind of feel a little bit kind of surprisingly right wing for the Royal Court. I mean, I suppose that in the interest of balance they should occasionally show a different perspective, but it did seem to me to be kind of going his single mother and kind of lots of porn and video game, violent video games, and yes, the grandmother's gone off with an asylum seeker, and the result is violent crime. It all seems a little bit simple to me, possibly more in light of where the story's going, which, I mean, we've not talked about because, you know, I think it would be a spoiler, than in terms of just watching it in that. I think it's one of those that, kind of looking back on afterwards, I kind of couldn't quite put my finger on it, but there was things about it that I found problematic. And I think maybe it is some of the views on kind of the cause and effect and what is going on in this story. It's maybe a little bit simplistic, but I think that Ned Bennett's production, and he's had an absolute gift of a set from Georgia Lowe, because it's so simple in theory, but actually the fact that the bars on either side of the traverse can function as climbing frames for the two of them, he uses that so much and to such good effect. She's a designer I really like, actually. I think she's always got some very interesting ideas, and I think he's really run with them, the director. So I think it's a very good production, but it's a problematic play for me. Tim, I think you were there the same night as me.
I kind of agree with the idea of poverty porn, I have to say. It's a difficult area to go into, the whole idea of that idea of poverty porn, where you're basically showing the lives of the underclass. Because, I mean, who are you showing it to? Most people who go to the theatre, although they might not self-identify as middle class, they'd probably much rather self-identify as working class, but most of them are sort of would fit into a middle class and a truly middle class idea of society. And this sort of thing, it doesn't help, it doesn't get you anywhere, it just shows you poor and unhappy people. And I did have a lot of trepidation going in, knowing that that was the sort of thing I was going to be seeing, and I was very much against this play initially. But I have to say, it did kind of win me over in the end, and I did see the quality. I mean, the writing is good, but I can see why, you know, it does feel a bit contrived. Certainly the character of Jen, I was almost tempted to tweet, what is the chav word for manic pixie dream girl? Because she does have a lot of that about her. The idea of a manic pixie dream girl, in case people don't know, is that you have a girl who sort of comes into a man's life and sorts him out without actually having any kind of inner life herself. Now, obviously, in this case, Jen does have an inner life and she has a fairly complicated story, but she's still not as important to the story and not as vital to the story as the two brothers are. And you get more of a sense of the two brothers and the mother than you really do of Jen or Jenny, this person who comes in and, we can't say fixes them, but certainly brings out a catharsis in their relationships and puts them onto a different path. That felt very artificial and contrived. But overall, I mean, the production is very good. I mean, certainly the physicality and the lighting imitating, as well as the climbing frames, you had the lights all round, which are able to go very bright at some point. You also had the idea of simulating a large television with these large floodlights flickering occasionally, which worked really quite well. I did have a slight problem because my economist in my head said, who's paying for the internet? If they're watching a lot of porn and playing online video games, they've got an internet connection and somebody's obviously stumping up for that at some point. But I suppose that's the sort of thing that might be all handled mystically by the council, and to the same extent that they can have the council house and nobody's really coming round to check on them. But then the idea is that nobody is anymore because they're parts of the underclass. So one or two bits of it didn't make sense. But having gone in thinking I was going to see this poverty porn, this, you know, the views of the lives of the underclass, oh, should you feel superior to them or should you feel terrible that it's happening, but let's just watch it anyway. Instead of that, it did win me over, and in the end I came out liking it and caring about it, which I think is a mark of a good play.
I hadn't, you know, read any reviews before going in because I don't like to. But I'd heard a lot of people raving about it on Twitter. You know, obviously you can't go into detail there. So maybe that's, you know, maybe I was going in a bit more optimistic than you were and was slightly disappointed. But it's certainly, you know, I can't say anything against the production itself. It's you know, the script I have certain issues with.
Night After Escaped Alone. So it's quite possible that that's made me even more positive about it.
We're now going to talk about Iphigenia in Splot. This is a play by Gary Owen, who also wrote Violence and Son, and is directed by Rachel O'Riordan. It's being done at the National Theatre's temporary space, and it's a retelling of the story of Iphigenia, but set in Splot, which, incidentally, is a rundown area of Cardiff, home to both John Humphreys and Shirley Bassey at one point. Gareth, You saw Iphigenia and Splott when you were up in Edinburgh. I'm not sure if it's changed that much since, but what did you think about it then?
I don't think it's the sort of play that can change much, really. It was a highlight of Edinburgh for me. It kind of caught me by surprise. It's written by Gary Owen, who, of course, wrote my best play of last year, Violence and Sons of the Royal Court upstairs. And he's kind of taken a dramatic adaptation of this Greek tragedy, and he set it in this part of Cardiff called Splott. And it's just one woman who's, and it's a very contemporary and a very extraordinary take on the Greek story. And I just found it absolutely captivating. I mean, it really kind of held your attention, drew you in. And that's partly, you know, partly the writing, but also Sophie Melville, who's an actress I hadn't seen before, is just simply stunning. And she just kind of inhabits this character and makes it very, very compelling theatre. So I was delighted when I found out after its tour it was coming in to the National Theatre's temporary space, because I think it's the sort of thing that needs to be seen in London, the sort of thing that needs to be seen by a wider audience. So, it, you know, after a year of the Greeks last year with all the Almeidas and whatever we've talked about when we did the review of the year, this for me was one of the best adaptations of Greek tragedy that I saw last year, as good as anything that came from big companies like the Almeida or the Dutch Mob who were at the Barbican. I thought this was a great piece of theatre, so strongly recommended for me.
I could see the qualities of this play, the strong writing and Sophie Melville's performance, but I did have a few problems. I spent too much of the early part of this play wondering how this was connected to Iphigenia. We are angrily told at the beginning that we are in debt, in her debt, but the story of Effie, our stand-in for Iphigenia, contains little of the Greek story I might have expected. The piece seems to change rapidly when we finally reach the equivalent of Iphigenia's sacrifice. But the change is not just that we suddenly get the story back on track, but there's also a tonal change. We no longer have the drink, the sex, the anger. Instead, we have something more coherent and more political point scoring. The other problem I had with this was the worry that we might be watching what Nick earlier, when we talked about Yen, called poverty porn. Was I watching some kind of miserable chav performing for the pleasure of the middle classes? I'm not sure that this is entirely true about this play, but it took me quite some time before I found myself giving a damn about Effie. So, although I can see that this is a good play, I wasn't entirely happy with it. It has been widely praised elsewhere, so I'm probably slightly in the minority here. We're now going to talk about one of those at the Tristan Bates Theatre. This is a new comedy written by Tom Ward Thomas. John, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, you've really said it entirely. It's written by a young actor named Tom Ward Thomas, and it is a piece of a couple of interlinked situations which happen on a passenger train from London to Cornwall. And the first couple that we meet, the first two characters that we meet, actually Ward Thomas himself plays the young man called James. He's sat in his carriage opposite a reasonably attractive young woman. They take some time to break the ice and initiate a conversation. And instantly what has happened is that they have each made false assumptions about the other's personal life, habits, situation, background, anything you like, from an instant assessment. And it's so familiar because we all do it all the time. You know, every time you meet anybody new, you make these internalized judgments about them. But the interesting thing is that Ward Thomas's characters externalize them. They actually ask the questions that a lot of people might just be thinking rather than saying out loud. And you discover, for example, I don't think it's giving too much of the plot away, that the young woman, who is about 24, is in a relationship with a man in his 50s, having been attracted to him through meeting him at work. You know, is it a bit of a cliche that she's actually his PA? And again, I don't really want to give it away, but there are lots of exchanges, lots of revelatory exchanges, and you discover more and more layers to the characters as the journey progresses. And then when they arrive at their destination, effectively time spools back and you see something that happens in an adjacent carriage on the same train. which turns out to be older couple who have, again, a revelatory experience which changes their marital relationship very dramatically. There are two things that I think marks Tom Ward Thomas as a writer to watch. One is it is very, very funny. The situations are quite unhappy in many cases, but it's written with a great deal of humour. And the other thing is he's one of the few young writers who can write middle class. You know, so much young writing is about angry situations, or it's about something that's slightly political, or it's written from the perspective of a person in their 20s. They tend not to be already successful, wealthy, have assets like middle class people do. But Ward Thomas's characters are upper scale from that, and you know, without it being in any way parodic, like, you know, Posh or something like that, it just felt very, very natural that he had the speech rhythms and the dialogue of middle class people, upper middle class people, probably. I mean, maybe his personal background, I'm not entirely sure whether it is or it isn't. But you know, if you were looking for someone who could write about these sorts of people in the same way that Alan Ayckbourn could write about them at the beginning of his career, I can see a parallel. I think this is a writer to watch, as well as a play that you should go and see, because it's very amusing. It's an hour and a quarter, so it passes a lot more quickly than most Great Western train journeys in my limited experience. And I thought it was put together very well indeed. Paul might like to talk a little bit more about the individual performers, the actors, but it's very neatly directed by Amy Eubank as well. It has a nice naturalistic set that obviously is a railway carriage with some seats that they either bought or stole from a railway company. And it just bowled along, really. And I was interested in the characters. I found them entirely credible, and I wanted to know what their outcome was. And I would have followed them into another plot sequence if it had been available.
That's
very good. Paul?
Actually, yes, John. I think one of the things I was thinking as the play was just ending was, oh, it was a pity we didn't end up going into another carriage to see another drama. It again was another of those pieces that we've seen recently. I think the piece at the King's Head Theatre, The Long Road South, was also like that, where you felt like it actually could have gone on for a bit longer and you would have enjoyed seeing another story that sort of connected all the characters together. But this is a terrific piece of new writing by Tom Ward Thomas. It started as a shorter play in 2013 and then was developed into its piece in its current form, and had a week-long run at the Tristan Bates Theatre last year in March. But now it's here for 3 weeks, and it is definitely worth catching. I think, as you mentioned, the thing about it is the naturalistic writing. It feels very accurate. It feels like it could have happened on a train. The set itself, you know, it drearily evokes the railway carriages. There's this wonderful overhead announcements that, you know, capture the essence of those sorts of long, boring train rides perfectly well. And then amongst this, you've got a terrific set of performances, not just Tom Ward Thomas's cast as the young man James, who meets Amy Newton, who plays Laura in the beginning. Yes, in the beginning, and they make all these assumptions, and just over a series of glimpses and glances, they strike up a bit of a rapport and a friendship, and it's terrific how it unfolds in that sense. In the second half of the piece, you then see these, what looks like these middle-aged lovers going away for a dirty weekend. And then it becomes apparent that there's something much more in that. And as the couple, Martin Ball and Emma Kelly as Philip and Davina, respectively, are actually quite funny to watch, particularly as the third character, played by Louise Bangay, comes in and throws everything off balance. It's very difficult to talk about the piece, though, without actually giving away too much of the plot, but actually try to resist doing that, because that is part of the surprise, and the way it unfolds, I think, is absolutely terrific. But I think, as I would agree with John, that this is one of the, you know, best pieces of new writing we've seen this year. Obviously, the year is young, but it's been, you know, it was a surprise and a thrill to actually have seen this today.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are, ayultp.com. The podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.